I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
I'm going to give the audience what I think they want.
They want chase scenes and car crashes.
They want the cops to bend the rules to get the job done. They want the boy to get the girl. They want the good guy to win. They want the bad guy to die, hopefully in the biggest explosion the budget will allow. But most importantly, Senator, they want to walk into a theater and for 90 minutes forget the fucking mess that you have left of this nation.
Go get your bubble gum.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello and welcome back to the All Out of Bubblegum podcast. I am Marty, and today I am once again joined by Brandon.
Hello.
And Alberto.
Hello.
Hey. So this is sort of a redemption episode for you.
Yeah, especially after the incredibly rape-filled movie that I completely neglected the rewatch to see just how much there was in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Code of the Eight Rapists or whatever it's called. Not a pleasant view.
Yeah, it makes Michael Winner seem like a feminist in comparison.
Oh, yeah, it does. Yeah.
Yeah, because last time you were on, we watched Bohachi Bushido, Code of the Forgotten Eight. And today, because Brandon and I didn't like that one, you get your shot at redemption. You get to try again. And today you suggested 1966's The Betrayal.
Which is far better.
Substantial improvement, I would say. I know we won Brandon over.
Yeah. Yes.
It's definitely something different.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody can resist the high body count in this one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just to get us started, Raizo Ichikawa stars in this. And according to our website, he kills 211 people in this one movie, which is a lot. And that is great. I really like the killing.
Correction. It's actually, I think, like 215, something like that.
Yeah, oh, okay.
The kill count video missed the scene on the beach.
Oh, really?
Oh.
Yeah, I talked to him about it. He's like, yeah, he's going to redo it. So, you know.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Well, it's still a huge number of people for like a 90-minute film.
I mean, that video was how I discovered the film.
Oh, okay. All right. That's cool.
But you were familiar with Raizo Ishikawa before?
Or not? Somewhat. Mostly through the like Sleepy Eyes of Death and Shinobi films.
Okay.
I didn't really like watch them. Oh, what?
Shinobi no Mono.
Yeah, Shinobi no Mono.
Yeah, okay. And he died young.
Oh, yeah. He died like in his 30s. Like,
oh, really?
37?
Yeah.
And he'd made 150 movies already.
Oh. Wow. But this one is really good.
Is he an ancestor of Eric Roberts somehow?
The Japanese Eric Roberts.
Yes. No, but I think Bunta Sugawara had something similar when we talked about him.
Yeah.
But he also just did 10 movies a year for several years in a row, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was, if he kept going, we'd be here like all day.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but what we got is like a pretty solid sort of ovary of movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is, I believe, the first one I've seen by him. And I was impressed, and it kind of made me want to watch more. I mean, this is a good samurai action drama.
As somebody who's like seen 7 of his films.
Oh, really?
I would highly recommend checking them out, especially the ones he did with Kenji Musumi, who did the Lone Wolf and Cub films.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've seen Lone Wolf and Cub, so yeah.
And if you want to get a little high class, check out An Actor's Revenge, which he has a special appearance in alongside Shintaro Katsu, who he was a frequent co-star. The studio liked to pair them up.
Hmm, I didn't know that. Okay.
Shintaro Katsu Satoishi, the original.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Original Blind Swordsman.
Hmm.
And he like broke through with like an adaptation of a Yukio Mishima called The Conflagration, which was based on The Temple of the Golden Pavilion.
Okay.
And that's great. It's by Kon Ichikawa.
What year was that?
That was like 1958. That was like
his really?
Breakthrough. Yeah.
Oh.
It's like his breakthrough film. And
okay.
Yeah, Tatsuya Nakadai is in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, okay.
I would recommend that one. It's a great drama.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, he did like two Yukio Mishima adaptations, including Ken, which is the second part of the Sword Trilogy by Kenji Mishumi. So, yeah, he is in a lot of certified kino.
Yeah, yeah. And this one is based on a silent film, actually, called, like, Orochi or something like that. Is that how it's pronounced? Orochi.
Yeah, which translates to the serpent.
Oh. I did not watch the silent film yet, but I watched the final battle on YouTube, and it is so far ahead of its time, it's ridiculous. I was watching that final battle, and it does look like a silent film because everything is sped up, you know. But other than that, it looked like something that kind of come out, like, 40 years after it. It's really incredible.
Yeah, apparently that's not even the original speed of the film. I looked. Apparently there's going to be like a new 4K restoration of it coming out.
Oh, wow. Because that looks like something that is way ahead of its time. I had a hard time believing that was from 1925.
Yeah, that film apparently was very innovative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's considered a classic over in Japan.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And, I mean, there's definitely similarities between it and this film that we're going to talk about. But yeah. Also differences, some pretty major differences, actually.
Oh, really? Have you seen Orochi?
I skimmed through it.
Okay, you skimmed through it.
The tried and true method that I've been doing on the podcast.
Okay.
But, you know, I don't like doing that, but, you know, I had to.
Yeah. And, I didn't have time to watch it either.
It's pretty good. You know?
Oh, okay. It did look pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not as insane as this is, though. It's a lot more grounded and perhaps even more bleak.
Oh, wow.
No?
Oh.
Yeah, because, let's just say he's not as lucky.
Okay. As in this film. Yeah. Yeah, I think I remember that ending from the YouTube clip I watched.
Yeah, but let's dive into the plot.
Yeah, the plot of Betrayal. Yeah. It's about a, okay, first of all, it's set in feudal, like, medieval Japan, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's about, like a dojo that refuses to, like, give a man a lesson. And then they murder him. And,
Well, to be fair, the guy, the teacher, was not there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So he's just like, you guys are a joke. And he leaves. Yeah. And he's just being an asshole about it. So one of the guys chases after him, and they get into a fight, and then the guy just like, he's just like, you guys are losers, and then he just gets stabbed in the back by the guy, and that just leads to a whole lot of trouble.
Yeah,
that didn't need to happen.
Yeah, and since this is my first Raizo Ishikawa film, I wasn't sure who he was playing, so I was kind of wondering, is this Raizo Ishikawa? No, he's dead. Oh, he's alive. Wait, he's dead. Never mind. Not him. Okay. So I was kind of wondering like which character was Raizo. But yeah, eventually you do settle on him. He plays Takuma. Is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah, Takuma.
Okay, Takuma. Yeah, he plays Takuma, who is the fall guy, correct? He's the guy that gets blamed by the clan for the murder of this potential dojo student. And he didn't do the crime, but they said, you did it. So he... to kind of like save face for the clan. I'm sorry for that voice, but yeah. So he has to save face, right? I mean, this is kind of like, in addition to being an action film, this is kind of like an analysis of like Japanese collectivist culture in a way, I guess you could say.
Yeah, he's basically asked by his future father-in-law. He's going to marry his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, look, I need you to take the fall for this. You know, go away for a year, lay low. You know, if I can't settle this, I will commit harakiri and personally, as a personal display of your innocence. But the guy dies of a heart attack before he can, like, do anything when the time comes.
Mm-hmm.
Which leaves him in a very vulnerable position because the guy who did the murder is also in love with the man's fiance. And he's like, I'm going to take her as my own. And, you know, he actually overhears the conversation of Ichikawa's character deciding to, you know, take up this very hard task.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses it to his advantage, which is very duplicitous and just downright evil.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, what a scumbag. Truly, you know, one of the, you know, you could say this is a betrayal.
Or The Betrayal, yeah.
Oh. Ooh.
So Raizo Ichikawa, he gets his wallet stolen while helping a child that's about to drown. So he's left penniless by all this, too. And he's a broken man now. His wife got stolen. He has no wallet. He's blamed for the murder of this potential dojo student. He's on the run and, like, I'm going to assume somewhere that's very far away from his hometown. And eventually he comes back, and there's a big action scene. But I don't want to get ahead of that. But this film is actually kind of like an analysis, as I kind of hinted at earlier, of, like, Japanese culture. It's kind of like, in Japan, there's a lot about, you know, saving face and stuff like that. Like, you got to, like, honor your culture and your family and stuff like that. And it's very collectivistic. And I got a lot of those, like, kind of, like, vibes that from this film, that this is kind of, like, critiquing that a little bit. Maybe not, like, going hardcore, like, Japan sucks, but it just kind of, like, it was an interesting, like, look at, like, Japanese culture, like, looking at itself and saying, maybe we have some problems with the way we handle our social disputes.
Yes, yes. I think you hit it on the nail on the head there.
Okay.
I mean, this isn't as harsh or as angry or as incendiary as Harakiri, which is like amazing. One of the greatest Japanese films of all time. But
okay, I haven't
seen
that
certainly, you know, got a bone to pick with the Bushido code and just the way of the samurai and how these men are treated, you know, especially if you're honorable. I mean, the society is flawed and you're basically going to get taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially if the person that you're working under is corrupt and you're at their mercy, essentially.
I really like that about the film, in addition to the huge body count. But I really like the take on Japanese honor culture, because, you know, a lot of samurai films are like, I got to go die for honor. But this film kind of says, maybe you shouldn't just go die for honor. Maybe there's, like, a different way of approaching, like, culture. That's the way I'm thinking of it properly.
Yeah, and speaking of culture, I mean, the society he lives in fails him as well.
Yeah.
You could say we live in a society. This is We Live in a Society film.
Oh, yes, this is Joker. Yes, this is the original Joker. Yes.
Yeah, Japanese samurai Joker.
Yeah.
Oh, no wonder I liked it so much.
I'm the Joker, baby. Just wait for Reizo Ichikawa to say that.
No, he could have been a great Joker. No, he couldn't have, but I don't know.
Hey, we don't know.
Oh, yeah, true. They made Turkish Star Wars, so why not Japanese Batman?
He's all wearing the mascara, so...
Oh! Yeah, that's true. Oh. And this film, I did enjoy, but the narrative and the storytelling, it's a little choppy at times, I thought. You know, it kind of, like, sometimes had a hard time telling, like, the progression of time in it. Like how long has passed between these two scenes? You know, that did feel a little weird at times. And the sets were all the same, which is understandable. They're all the same, like, paper house. I mean, it could have had, like, one set for the entire film, and I wouldn't have noticed, because every room looks the same, which is fine, but it's just a little thing I noticed. It's not, like, most... And the cinematography is good, though. I will give it that. Cinematography is good. But it's not, like, the most visually, like, splendorous sets I've ever seen in a movie. But, you know, it's fine. I mean, I'm sure that's what houses look like in Japan in the Middle Ages, so who am I to complain?
Yeah, I also think that the movie just gives you way too much information and characters up front in one go, basically.
Yeah, I understand that, yeah.
I would have preferred a slower introduction to all the important characters.
I get that, yeah.
Yeah, it does kind of throw a lot at you within, like, the first 10 to 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of overload.
Oh, yeah.
But.
I think it does start to get a grasp on things, and slowly but surely all the pieces begin to come together, especially by the end.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, though I had no idea who the guy was that talks to him at the end.
Oh, that's the brother. That's the brother of the guy who got killed.
We get so many characters at the start that I'm like, I don't know who these people are. I can't tell them apart. I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't blame you. There's a few moments like that for me, too.
Yeah.
So, the action scenes, we're going to get to the final action scene a little later, but most of the action scenes prior to that, they're not exceptional, but they're serviceable. They're pretty much your typical, like, 60s, based on what I've seen, 50s, 60s samurai action scenes. And it's not mind-blowing, before the final battle, but it's still pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's decent, you know? I mean, like, if that was just the movie, it'd be all right, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty decent, especially the first action scene that Ichikawa gets when he has the titular betrayal done upon him.
Ooh, yeah.
The guy's just like, yeah, we're not gonna, you know, let you come back, you know? And
yeah.
And the main villain's just like, he just gleefully tells him, yeah, she's my wife now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he kills a few people in that scene, which... At first, he's using, like, the sword inside its sheath or whatever it's called, scabbard. I don't know. I'm not a sword guy. I did not study the blade. But he's, like, so he's kind of, like, he doesn't want to kill people at first. But then he takes this sword out of its sheath or whatever it's called. I don't know. Then he does start killing people a little bit. Which I find a little surprising, because are these people his friends at this point still? I mean, not, like, his close friends, but, like, people he knows? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, they are, like, trying to kill him.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
He's, like, become quite beaten down after, like, a year out on his own. Especially after the scene where he's, like, doing construction, and that that real asshole of a magistrate, deputy magistrate at that, comes and just beats the shit out of him. He's like, what are you doing? You know, as a samurai, you're a disgrace, working as a construction worker.
Yeah, there's a little more of that social commentary there.
Yeah, and of course he meets him later again.
Yeah.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, he kills him.
Okay.
Yeah, the guy's like, it's you for the construction. Yeah. And like, because he's like beating up like a prisoner who's, he's like, I'm innocent. And it just like instantly like he sympathizes because of his situation. And he's like, hey, why can't you just hear him out? And the guy's like, what's your problem? And he just tries to walk away. He's not trying to start something. But, you know, of course, he lives in a society that won't leave him alone.
Yeah.
And he kills the guy just like that. You know, the guy was nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was kind of surprised he got away with that crime, basically, considering there was a bunch of witnesses, wasn't there, if I recall correctly?
Yeah, like in front of like a whole village, I think.
But, yeah,
I don't think you want to mess with a guy who just killed a guy with one single stroke of his blade.
Fair enough. Yes, fair enough.
I mean, probably also why there was like 200 people at the end of this film coming after him.
Yeah, strength in numbers. But one of the interesting parts of this film, I thought, was how the violence was not that detailed. I mean, this was about the time like violence was really getting crazy in cinema. But this movie, there's barely any blood, which I'm not saying is a bad thing. I just thought it was an interesting thing. Because if I recall correctly, based on videos I've seen, like violence in Japanese cinema was really getting bloody about this time. But this film, it almost feels like a throwback to like Seven Samurai or something like that.
Yeah, I would probably say even Seven Samurai has more violence, more brutal violence in it than this.
Perhaps. I mean, this film does have an attempted rape scene.
Outside of that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like outside of the attempted rape scene, the violence is very tame in this movie, even compared to something like Seven Samurai, where people are being like repeatedly speared to death.
Yeah, cowering in corners as villagers clumsily try to stab them to death with spears.
that shocked me a little bit when I saw it the first time. I was like, oh, Seven Samurai is a bit more violent than I thought it was going to be. But yeah, so going back to this film, The Betrayal, there's really not much blood when people get killed, which isn't a bad thing. It's not a good thing. It's just felt like a throwback to like an earlier time.
To me, though, I gotta say my enjoyment of these samurai movies is sort of directly correlated to the amount of blood.
Okay. Oh. Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
The bloodier, the better.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I don't blame you for that, but...
Yeah.
I thought there's like an innocent naivete about the violence in this film.
Yeah, it has a certain charm, definitely.
Yeah.
But like, especially at the final battle, he kills 200 guys and we don't see a single drop of blood. His sword is just shiny throughout. Like,
yeah, you
have a
bit disappointed.
Yeah. I mean, if you want like the bloody version of this, watch the opening to Blade of the Immortal by Takashi Miike. Which is basically just a tribute to this film.
Oh, really?
Oh.
The opening scene is this scene at the end?
Yeah, it's just the main character killing like 99 people. I haven't personally watched the film, but I know of that opening.
Okay. All right. Who's the actor that does that?
I think it's Takaya Kimura.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that person, so...
He was the voice of Hal in Hal's Moving Castle.
Oh, I've seen that film, so yeah.
Yeah, certified Kino.
Yeah. So Raizo, I think Raizo is very impressive in this film. I was not expecting like this stoic performance to have quite the impression that on me that it did, because he's a movie star in this, even though he doesn't like emote much, but he gets his point across, especially during the action scenes.
Oh, I wouldn't call him stoic.
Yeah, he has a really sad look on his face all the time.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough.
Although that could just be the cancer.
Oh.
No, I think he brings across the naivete of his character quite well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
He really does start off as this, like, bright-eyed guy, you know, very idealistic. And then by the end, he's defeated and he's almost given up completely. And, yeah. You know, he's just, you know, completely cynical. And he's like, I don't believe in anything anymore. I'm an alcoholic now.
Yeah, he's dead on the inside. Yeah.
Yeah, but then everything comes together. You know, the law enforcement arrive. The his former clan is there.
Mm-hmm.
The murderer. And the brother of the murdered guy also shows up with his clan. And it's just 200 guys all gunning for him. As well as the Yakuza clan that he joined up with, which includes the guy who stole his money in the first place.
Oh, really? I did not notice that.
Oh.
Yeah, he's the guy who like follows them around a lot throughout the film.
Okay, the comic relief type character guy.
Yeah, yeah, that scumbag who tries stealing the money off of the couple who committed suicide in the forest.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, my jaw dropped just a little bit when I saw the army that was coming after Ishikawa at the end. Not, like, to the floor, but, I mean, it did kind of like, oh, this scene, this is what we've been waiting for. And up to this point, the film was still really good. I mean, it's an interesting analysis of Japanese culture with some action. But then the final scene comes around, and it's just, yeah, I get why this film is loved.
Yeah, you've had your dinner, now you get to have dessert.
Oh, yeah, definitely that feeling, yes. Yes.
So I have a small question. What exactly is a clan?
I believe it's like a group, sort of a, not like a gang, but it's sort of a, I guess a government sanctioned sort of like, it's like a family almost, but like with...
Like an extended family?
Not blood related, but you know, they sort of work under one unified banner.
Okay.
Yeah, but so... In this day and age that this sets, was Japan unified or were all the clans also sort of like in charge of towns?
I think they're in charge of their own sort of districts and stuff. I mean,
like its own royal family almost?
A clan usually meant like a household who sort of form a unit in a village or an organization.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that either. Because I know like clan, people mostly use that word, they mean like a family, but... I wasn't really sure how it was being used in this film exactly. I just kind of assumed it meant the same thing, but...
Okay, no, but that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Because they keep talking about the clan, but it also seems sort of like they have some sort of governmental say. So it was a bit confusing, but yeah, no, now it makes sense.
Yeah. So you have to save, like, face inside the clan. I don't really like saying the clan that much, because coming from the United States, when we say the clan, we're usually talking about something very different.
Yeah, but that's clan with a K, right?
So. Yeah, yes. So C-Clan. So anyway, so he has to save face for the C-Clan. C-word clan. Yeah. I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore, but yeah. So are we going to get into the big action scene at the end yet?
Oh, yeah. We got to start with how it starts.
Unless you want to talk about the attempted rape some more.
No, please.
Right, although
she kills herself.
Yeah, she bites her tongue off, which is brutal.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
I mean, it happens off screen, but, you know.
Okay.
But she does mention to him, like, because he gets into a duel with his former sensei.
Yeah.
He's like, do we really have to fight, bro? You know me. You know I didn't do this. He's like, yeah, but I'm a samurai. He's like, you got to be kidding me. And they duel. He gets injured and falls off a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
He kills the sensei, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and before this, he was, like, asking the guy who murdered the dude in the beginning, he's like, come on, fight me, you coward. And he's like, no. He's like, he just proves yet again what a backstabbing scumbag of a coward that he is. And he's basically nursed back to health by a woman who, does she run the inn? I think she does, because I didn't see anybody else.
It's not a popular inn, but yeah.
Finally, a guest.
Yeah.
Need to nurse him back to health first.
Yeah, then he can pay me.
Yeah.
Yes. Ooh. But he's completely just defeated now. His worldview is just done for. He's had to kill a sensei. And she's like, why are you so angry? You know, why are you so cynical? He's just like, there's nothing. I used to believe in the samurai code, and look where it's got me. Nowhere. Right? I might as well be a scoundrel, which is basically the plot of the original film, where yeah, but instead of like being framed for murder, it's a series of misunderstandings that lead him to have his reputation further and further ruined until he's eventually an outlaw.
Okay.
But you know, here this is like his start of his darkness. Well, I guess wannabe sort of darkness, because he contemplates raping her, and he's just like, and she's like, why would you do that, huh? You think I'm gonna like you after this? And he's like, oh, what have I done?
Yeah.
And
But she threatens him that she's gonna bite her own tongue.
Yep.
If he goes through with it.
Okay.
And then another guy comes along and attempts the same thing, and then we see her dead. So we sort of know what she did.
Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah, and that guy, well, it's two guys actually. They're actually looking for him, so it's kind of indirectly his fault for it happening.
Yeah.
And he feels just immense guilt, and that leads to him joining up with this Yakuza sort of gang. And, you know, he's an alcoholic now. He's drinking a lot of sake. And that's when he comes across his wife in the brothel. Because she went looking for him, actually, with his father. And, you know, she ends up getting kidnapped and sold to the brothel. And he's like, you gotta let her go. I'll pay you anything. I'll work for you. I'll work it off. And that's when he's yet again betrayed. Because I believe it's the thief character who sells him out yet again. I mean, this guy just, he's trying to like become the number one scumbag in this film.
Yeah.
He's stealing money from corpses. You know, he's stealing the main character's money. He's like double crossing him. Tries to kill him, actually. During the sword fight at the start of it, and immediately gets killed for it.
Yeah.
You?
And yeah, fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck him. As well as the Yakuza boss, who he also kills. He's just like, you said you were like Buddha. And he just slashes his ass to pieces.
Yeah.
Well, in the most PG way imaginable.
Yeah, of course. Was Buddha even a thing in Japan? Is that like more of like
I mean, there's a lot of Buddhists. I mean, that's kind of like the main sort of, I guess you could say, religion that they practice there.
Okay, I thought it was like Shinto or something like that, but I don't know.
I think so. I mean, it's a combination of the two, I believe. Any Japanese listeners, please correct me if I am wrong. Yeah. I am so sorry.
Yes. We're not that culturally insensitive. We just don't know.
We're not insensitive. We're just stupid.
We're total bozos over here.
Yeah.
We're total posers, yes. We know all about your cinema, but we don't know what your religion is. Sorry.
Yeah, but let's dive into this final fight. Truly.
All right.
One for the ages.
This was good, yeah.
It's just 15 minutes of uninterrupted action.
Yeah, a lot of people come at him with ladders and stuff, and I was just like, who's going to win? The guy with the ladder or the guy with the katana? I don't know. Who's going to win? Ooh, a few guys come at him with, few people come at him with, plywood walls or something like that, and they obviously get killed because you can't fight somebody with a plywood wall. But yeah, it's okay, so like not everybody's armed properly.
But some guys have really big ladders that they need two guys to carry.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Those guys have two ladders. I mean, two people to carry. I'm sorry, my bad. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe they're trying to like capture him alive. Because that's the law coming after him, which would explain why everyone else is trying to like stab him. Mm-hmm. But you know, we tried to capture him. Let's just kill him now.
Yeah.
We even tried to capture him with the hand cards. What more could we do?
What could we do? We tried to sneaks and ladders.
We tried to trap him under 5 hand carts that we drove at him. We've tried everything.
Yeah. So the fight starts out like the bordello. They're inside a little bit. He's killing some Yakuza members. And then he goes outside and sees like an army of like literally like 200 people staring him down. And they come at him maybe like 2 at a time. Because, you know, it's an action movie, so it would be over really quickly if all of them attacked him at once. But, so they come at him, like, 2 or 3 at a time, and he just cuts them all down.
I would choose to believe that they're doing it, you know, out of a honorable sort of, I guess you could say, the samurai ethics. But, I don't know.
Is that the same samurai ethics that no one has shown throughout the rest of the movie?
I know. Wildly inconsistent, these people. Yeah. Would be pretty damning.
Yes.
I mean, it already is. I mean, you watch the rest of the movie, it's like, oh yeah, what a bunch of hypocrites.
Yeah. And so people are attacking him with ropes and stuff like that, and he just goes through him with a sword, just cuts right through him. It's very beautiful, I guess you could say, in a way. He just cuts through all those ropes with his sword, you know, and they're just like, oh, what do we do now? I don't know. Maybe we'll kill him with, like, an actual weapon this time.
Yeah.
And instead of a rope. Yeah. So it's a good action scene. And I really like how exhausted Ichikawa looks at times. It's not like one of those action scenes where it's just kind of like the main character killing, like, 25,000 people without breaking a sweat like a John Wick movie. He's actually looking pretty exhausted at some points.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's really struggling. And, mm-hmm. I mean, he even tries to get some water from a well at one point. Mm-hmm. But then somebody tries to sneak up on him, but he yanks their ass.
Yeah. And it goes on for like 15 minutes. Yeah.
I think we talked about it in the previous Bollywood episode on the movie Kill, where I said I don't like it when they have the actor act tired during a fight. Oh. But on this one, I kind of liked it, actually.
Oh, yeah, I appreciated that little touch because it really brought home, because they didn't dwell on it, but it really brought home, like, how, like, tough this fight was, you know? And it wasn't like, oh, he's so tired, you know, like, he can't fight anymore. It's not like the last few parts of the action scene are worse than the first parts. It's pretty consistent in how good it is throughout the entire runtime of the fight scene. So it's not like being tired is impacting his performance, killing people.
Yeah, and it's also, he's not only physically tired, he's also getting mentally tired, I feel.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. That's very true, too. Yeah.
Very much a wary load that he has weighing on him.
He's been betrayed by like 20,000 people, and he's killing them all.
Yeah. And then,
a man trying to defy his fate.
Yeah.
Will. But then the guy's brother, I think it is then, he talks to him, and he looks at him and says, I know you're not a murderer. And he's like, 100 bodies around him.
Those were justified killings, though. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Completely different. Sorry.
Completely different. Yeah. Self-defense. Yeah.
100 cases of self-defense. Yeah, but he's like, but I have to fight you anyways for my dignity and honor.
Yeah.
As a samurai. And he's just like, he has this look on his face. He's like, are you fucking kidding me? Okay. And I love how when he comes out of the bordello and... he's just got this horrified look on his face. He's just like, oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those samurai ethics will drive you to do wild things.
Yeah. Like, kill the guy you know is innocent of the crime that you were trying to avenge.
Yeah.
He's like, there's no way this guy could have stabbed a man in the back.
The one time somebody sticks to their samurai ethics, it means he has to kill them.
Yeah. Yeah, it really kind of makes honor look like a joke. Yeah.
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 Though that's the point of the movie.
Yeah.
And the guy who started this whole mess, he just gets killed like he's nothing, which he is.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. I kind of even forgot how he dies. I mean, I'm going to assume he gets killed by a sword, perhaps. But I can't remember exactly the details.
Not exactly a whole lot of... varied ways of people getting killed in this film, except biting your tongue off. But, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he uses, like, a Sword Sword as well, because sword actually gets broken during the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, that was a cool moment.
Yeah, that was cool. He has to like pry his fingers one at a time off of the broken sword. Well, he's got the knife in his mouth.
Yeah.
Because he's been fighting so long that he's just like gripping it.
He's got hand cramps.
Yeah, and that moment is also in the original movie, The Serpent.
Oh, yeah, I think I saw that in Orochi, the clip I watched, yeah, from the final battle, yeah. And we're going to make, are we done talking about the final battle? Because I want to talk about, like, the last 2 seconds, or are we going to continue talking about the final battle for a little longer?
Well, I would just say that there were a lot of moments in the final battle where I was wondering, like, but what was their plan? Because a lot of the guys just seemed to come running at him with a sword above their heads, and then they get slashed across the stomach. I'm like, yeah. What did you think was going to happen?
Now, to be fair, that is an issue with like a lot of samurai films.
Yes, okay. Yes, that's probably true. But also, like, they get slashed, and then you can see the actor sort of going, oh, no, I can't fall in frame. So he takes a couple of steps back deliberately so he can fall out of frame, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But also a lot of...
Yeah, go ahead.
A lot of the guys with the ladders, they hit him with the ladder, they have him trapped under the ladder, and then he just slashes at their feet. And I'm like, what? Did they have a plan? Like, the guy has a sword, they have a ladder. What did they think was going to happen? I don't know. Somebody help me, please.
It reminds me of the action scene at the end of the Code of the Eight Rapists when like the guy is fighting like with like... When the guy's like chopping off people's arms and ears and stuff like that, and they're like fighting on flat territory with ladders.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't know. It just reminded me of that. I don't know if that's relevant, but
quite a few similarities.
Yeah, it could be a theater influence. Who knows?
Oh yeah, it could be. Yeah. True.
It's definitely a very theatrical attack move.
Yeah. It's very like over the top and stylized.
But yeah, the last 2 seconds, Brandon.
Okay. Spoiler alert. Do you consider this a happy ending or a sad ending? Because he does get back with his wife at the end, but like they're both emotionally devastated by the events that took place over the course of the runtime. So is this like, yay, they're back together? Or is it like, oh, wow, they've been through a lot together. They're never going to be the same. Do you have any thoughts about that?
It's definitely an ambiguous ending. But also,
yeah.
I would definitely have to say I think it is kind of a very sort of bleak, sort of like, all of this for what? You know?
Oh, okay.
You know, I mean, yeah, he won. He came out on top. There's no denying that.
Mm-hmm.
But his soul is forever, you know, scarred by this.
Yeah.
After you kill 200 guys in single battle, it's kind of hard not to be forever changed and possibly traumatized.
Yeah.
And you, like, you could tell just by the way he walks at the end that that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Though on the bright side, him and his wife have to do a lot of repopulating.
Yeah, and a lot of burying people. Like, who's going to bury these like 200 people just like laying in the streets? That's the sad part of the ending.
Just bulldoze the town, it's easier.
Well, the houses are made of paper after all, so it shouldn't be too hard. Well,
they can't possibly arrest him for these 200 deaths, you know, quite frankly. You know, fool me once, same on you. But fool me twice.
There's nobody left to arrest him.
Oh, they're all dead, yeah. He killed everybody, yeah. Fool me once, fool me twice, fool me 200 times. Yeah, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, the ending. But, I mean, I was kind of pleasantly surprised by the ending. I was like, oh, he got back together with his wife. Sure, they're traumatized for life, but... Oh, it's so sweet.
Yeah, you would think that with such a bleak film... that it would like end with him dying or getting arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the original film, by the way.
Yeah.
But no, you completely don't expect it. It's almost a pleasant surprise.
Oh yeah, that's how I viewed it, yeah. I mean, sure, he's traumatized, but it is kind of pleasant.
It's also almost more bleak that he survives.
Yeah. In a way. Yeah, that's true, yeah. I guess you could say that, like, I just killed, like, 200 people. My soul is dead. I feel dead on the inside. Now I have to live a little bit longer. Yeah, I guess you could see that, yeah.
But, man, what a badass ending.
Yeah. In spite of it knows that, right when to end.
Yeah, don't linger too much, you know, just boom, go to credit.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that part of it. Just, it's only, the movie is only, like, 87 minutes long or something like that, which is great, because It didn't need to be any longer. And it ends right after the final battle, like 2 seconds after like the last guy dies. And it's just like, the end. I was like, oh, this is a nice ending.
Yeah. So did you guys feel like the movie maybe dragged a little bit in the middle?
I wasn't sure dragged is the right word, but you can definitely tell the film is building up to something, you know, kind of like, okay, we're eating our vegetables at this point of the film, you know, let's get to the good stuff. But yeah, I don't say dragged is the right word, but like, I understand why somebody would feel that way.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, go ahead.
Sorry. No, you go.
I was going to say most of the film is kind of like an eat your vegetables analysis of Japanese collectivist culture or honor culture, or like saving face culture with some action thrown in the middle. Then you get like the big, big real reason to watch, you know, the big final battle. So, I mean, you know, it's a tale of two films. No, okay, it's not a tale of two films. I take that back. Everything I said was a lie. But, you know, it is kind of like a film that does kind of take its time building up to like the big finale that you've been waiting for.
Yeah. Though you say it's a movie about commentary on Japanese collectivist culture, I think you could say that it's also commenting on something that's pretty prevalent in Western culture nowadays, in that speaking about honor is easier than doing it.
Oh,
so yeah. Nowadays it's easy to say that you're for all sorts of good causes and you care about this and that, but actually getting off your ass and helping, that's something that very few people actually do.
Yeah, I sent a tweet about it the other day, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That doesn't help anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I didn't think about it that way, but you're right.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So that part about it I liked, and I can definitely see why people like this movie as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't quite click for me. Maybe on a rewatch, when I know which characters I have to pay attention to and which characters are sort of not that important.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I can see why people like this. Especially you, Alberto. This is almost tailor-made for you.
Yeah.
I got that feeling too.
I'm a sucker for a happy ending.
Yes.
One that is also, but is it?
Ooh, yes. Yeah. The end, question mark. Yeah. They should make a sequel to this.
Trail 2, where he kills like 2 times the amount of people.
Yeah, that'd be something to see. The Betrayal 2, Betray Harder. Yeah, that'd be good.
So I was kind of surprised that you liked it, Brendan.
Oh, yeah. I was surprised a little bit, too, because I don't really understand Japanese culture very well. I'll admit that. I just don't understand it very well. But this film, it made sense to me. I was like, hey, I get what they're trying to say here a little bit. And then the action comes, and you're like, I get the action, too. Rise of Ishikawa, this guy's a badass. I get it. Yeah, I understood this film in a way that I did not understand Code of the 8 Rapists or whatever it's called.
Well, at least we made a breakthrough with Brandon.
Yeah.
When it comes to Japanese culture.
Yeah, I still don't understand what's going on there. I mean, like, they put, like, Pikachu on their jet airliners. Like, what is happening here?
Hey, you know, what's wrong with Pikachu?
Nothing, but it's, I don't know, it's kind of weird to put it on your jet airliner.
Hey, they're proud of their culture.
Yeah.
You know. People. Yeah, but
do Belgian people put Tintin on their airliners? I don't know.
They should.
They should. Yes, they should. I take everything I said back. They should do that.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, just like we should put, I don't know, Indiana Jones on our airliners. I don't know.
Oh, that is a great idea, unironically. So I take back everything I said about Japanese culture. Japanese culture is awesome.
They know what
they have it figured out.
They have it figured out. Put Indiana Jones on our airliners. Put Sabaton on Swedish airliners. This is good stuff. Yes.
Sabaton on Swedish airliners.
Yeah, Sabaton, definitely the most iconic Swedish music group.
Yeah. But ABBA, yeah, okay, yeah.
So, yeah, is there anything you guys want to add about the betrayal?
If you want to watch a samurai film that has a high body count and is incredibly critical of the samurai code and the culture around the feudal era, I would highly recommend this movie, you know, especially if you want to get into Reijo Ishikawa and, you know, his sadly short career,
mm-hmm.
but a very prolific one at that. Check out this film.
Yeah.
Yeah, you said it best. You touched on all the high points. You know, it's got the action with the body count. It's got like the interesting like analysis of samurai culture. It's a good entry point for Raizo Ichikawa's career. It's just a good movie.
Yeah, unfortunately, this hasn't gotten a release outside of Japan, as far as I know.
Okay.
Maybe something's in the works, but I mean, you know, especially since a lot of Ichikawa's films have just recently, within the past 2 years, been getting some pretty good releases on Blu-ray, like A Certain Killer and the first three Shinobi Nomono films.
Oh, okay.
Hmm. Let's pray for a Sleepy Eyes of Death box set by Arrow Video.
How many of those films are there?
There's like 12, Damn. And then another two without him.
Oh.
Probably would have been like just as long as Zatoichi if it kept going.
Yeah.
But we'll never know.
No. Maybe at the end of this podcast, we should also mention that the movie's in black and white, which I don't think we've mentioned yet.
Yeah, we haven't mentioned that it's in black and white. People are going to be like, well, why isn't there any blood? Well, it's in black and white.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it was sort of implied in a Japanese movie from 1966, but...
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of colored films, even like in the late 50s as well, so...
Okay.
We kind of do have to like clarify, this is a black and white film, okay?
Yeah.
This is not color. All right, so if you don't like black and white, what's wrong with you?
Yeah. I mean, the cinematography does look good. Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, cinematography is great, especially during the first scene when he's betrayed. And he's like running down an alleyway, and it's all one shot. It's out in like a... There's like a tall grass, and you see in the foreground him fighting, killing a couple guys, and then running away. And then you see him like having, you know, escape, sneaking into the alleyway. Mm-hmm. It's just one continuous shot, and it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, the movie's got, like, a really solid sense of filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a good time, well, not a good time, but, you know, something that's got, like, well, I don't know, debatably a good time, you know? I mean, this is a bit of a dreary watch. You know, just be ready, all right? Because this movie's all about the payoff, baby. All about the payoff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Check out The Betrayal, and once you're done checking that one out, check out our website, alloutofbubblegum.com, check out our Patreon, join our Discord, and we'll see you next time.
All right, have a good day. Bye.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
I would say if somebody's going through betrayal trauma, step one is to have a place to vent and talk about it again and again and again. What clinicians need to understand is that these are folks who are experiencing a massive sense of injustice, and there's nothing we can do to make them feel whole.
It doesn't matter. I'll kill them all.